Hello, everybody. This is Sue Frederick. Let's have a mystical conversation, the kind where we lose ourselves in the wonders of divine mysteries, share dreams from the other side, intuitive nudgings, and soul mission yearnings. A mystical conversation is what happens when we lift above our human mind, our ego mind, and review life from that place of divine inspiration. I'm Sue Frederick, and I'm the author of many books, including my newest book, Through a Divine Lens, and also another new book, Sacred Numerology Workbook, all available on Amazon and on my website, suefrederick.com. But I am most excited today about my guest for this mystical conversation. He is extraordinary. His name is Jacob Cooper. He's the best-selling author of Life After Breath and the Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. He's a sought-after speaker on grief, wisdom, and consciousness. He teaches meditation and mindfulness seminars to help others find purpose and overcome fears of life after death. He's a clinical social worker, Reiki master, and certified hypnotherapist, and he specializes in past life regression, and he uses his extensive personal and professional experience to empower all of the clients and patients that he sees in his work every day as a psychotherapist. So the most extraordinary thing, beautiful Jacob, that I want you to share with the listeners as we get started is this all started for you, this awakening in this life when you were only 3 years old. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, Jacob, we'll talk about the genesis, no pun intended, my own genesis. It's a different path. You're right. You know, a lot of people wake up in their midlife or maybe their early 20s. But for me, I've always been this way. And I think we all have. I think just so many of us forgot. But at 1993, at just the young age of 3 years old, I had my NDE due to pertussis, otherwise known as whooping cough. And, you know, it was right before the Jewish high holiday. I come from a Jewish Orthodox background. Of, you know, the Jewish high holiday is called Yom Kippur. It was in the month of September, which is the day in which the soul is ready to greet itself to the Creator, a day of abundance, manifestation, and, you know, clearing off, you know, the year as well. But little did I know I was about to meet the Creator, but this went far beyond my own religious tradition. It was a direct experience with God, you know, beyond my synagogue. I went to a playground with family, friends, and I climbed up to a ladder onto a slide. When with each rung that I was climbing, I began to just suffocate more and more. My breathing became more belabored. And at the top of the slide, everything shut down. I was purely suffocated. My body shut down and everything. And so I went outside of my body as if, you know, if you're trying to start a car and the car's not working, not you're just going to hang out in a hot car, you're going to go outside of it, pop the engine, see what's going on. And that's kind of what I did. And I was able to see my body with a lot more awareness, and I felt my body just suffocated as if you're in a power breaker and you shut off one unit at a time and there was nothing to hold on to. I guess the only thing was to do was to let go. And I let go after I felt my brain literally snap in half due to the deprivation of oxygen. And once, you know, my brain snapped in half, as the saying goes, that's when God in the spirit realm came in, and I went on quite a familiar journey that we've all been on many times. And this was the journey to home. And this, you know, NDE that I had, you know, included but not limited to, I was aware of, you know, spirit guides, you know, angels, you know, past lives, my soul's purpose. I was aware of my own soul family members. I had a understanding of God, Christ consciousness. It was just a full-blown mystical experience. But the most profound aspect of it as to why I'm here is the power of choice. Many near-death experiencers are either told it's not your time and you have more work to do, or you're given autonomy. And I was given autonomy to continue my life, you know, as 3-year-old Jake and living that life out. But the reason why is I had premonitions of the work that I would do and the people that I would help, and just the understanding that the other side in heaven is always there, but the ability to bring that awareness into this reality allows us to not wait until we die, until we have awareness, or that we don't have to die until we are able to see our true nature, that we could wake up from the dream in this reality too. And so with that decision, everything dissipated, and I woke up in a hospital bed with my mother accompanying me, and had the rest of my life to put the pieces of the puzzle together from that NDE.
I'm just so curious what it must have been like as a three-year-old. I know it's hard to go back to the three-year-old mind, but you're waking up in a hospital bed. Did you feel like you'd had a dream? Like, how did your mind interpret that experience back then?
I was more so met with a lot of rage, which to me is a trauma response. This was an incredibly traumatic event. But the anger was more so frustration that I knew what happened, but I wasn't able to articulate it to the people around me. And it was very frustrating. You know, my father once came up to me recently and he said, you know, shortly after you had your NDE, he came up to me and said, hey, Dad, remember when I was rushed by the ambulance? You know, something happened on that day, but it's not going to make sense to you now, but one day it will. And, you know, he told me that very matter of fact, you know, when I was rushed to the hospital. So, yeah, the period of suffocation was the most challenging experience during my NDE, but that period lasted until I was able to really own my NDE and fill out the purpose of it, which was not to hold on to it, but to let it go. Much like when I survived, it was by letting go of suffocation and surrendering to the breath of eternity, when my own physical breath was taken away.
You know, I've heard you talk about how you saw past lifetimes during that experience. Is that correct? Am I getting that right? And that you understood that you had perhaps taken your own life in a previous life, and that there was a parallel to the suffocation feeling you were having. Am I getting this right? Tell me how it went for you when you understood the parallel there.
First of all, as mental health, you know, someone in the mental health field, I really love your work because, I mean, your wording of that, because there's, you know, people say complete with that, and they say, you don't complete a heart attack, you know, you don't complete, you know, cancer, you don't commit a heart attack, you don't commit cancer. Mm-hmm. So the decriminalization of suicide is very significant. But yes, in my last lifetime, you know, that did happen, and there's a lot of allegory and symbolism with my NDE. You know, I have had since then, before getting public, a lot of intuitives have been able to tap into what exactly I saw in my last lifetime. And this was an image that didn't stop itself in my NDE. I would have frequent dreams of it. And, you know, I would just be walking around and those images of that last lifetime would be present. I believe from completion would begin, and there's lessons involved. And from other lifetimes, you know, they infiltrate itself in different ways in the current lifetime. But for myself, it was learning how to let go of a feeling as if my back was against the wall and there was no hope, there was no way out, and the power of surrender that saved my life. So letting go of my own suffocation of the physical body to surrender to the breath of eternity.
That is so beautifully said. Oh my God, Jacob, you're a gorgeous writer too. I mean, anybody who's listening, if you haven't read his books, you have to read his books. He's a beautiful writer, and they're all on Amazon. Right. And again, The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder, and what's the other one? The other one is
Life After Breath.
Life After Breath, right, which I love so
much. You know, you look at Life After Breath, Dr. Raymond Moody is on the book, who coined the term NDE in the mid-70s. But Life After Breath, in a way, you know, is an ode and a homage to life after life. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like a spinoff, but in a way it's different. You know, it's not a kind of like a research kind of, it's my own memoir of my NDE. But Life After Breath really speaks to the fact that my own breath was taken away and there's continuity of it. But to me, there's one eternal breath, and that's the breath of eternity. You know, in my own faith in Judaism, the word for spirit, it translates to ruach in Hebrew language, which means the breath of God or the wind of God. And so we're all created by the breath of God. And so when we pass away, you know, physically, our breath is taken from us, but then we're restored with the breath of eternity. And, you know, that's what happened to myself.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so important that people hear your story, because I work, and you do too, I'm sure, with many people who've lost a loved one who took their own life. And the first thing they have to deal with is the horrible negative way that society looks at that, and also that religion looks at that. So many of the moms I've worked with would tell me, you know, I was very involved in a very Christian church, and then my child intentionally took, you know, crossed early, and they went to church, and the minister told them that their child was condemned for that. Mm-hmm. And the Catholic Church says that as well, which is just horrifying to me. So I always love talking about that choice point moment that you're talking about. You were held by spirit and guides and angels and shown the choices you could make. And isn't it true that you were told that either choice was okay, that your soul could decide? Is that correct?
Absolutely. There was autonomy. But I first want to preface that I think a lot of people's depiction of God is really a projection of their own childhood or their principles or toxic parents. And it's not a white man with a beard with a stick, you know, condemning people. The essence of God, you know, to me is a vibration, and that vibration is pure love, pure unconditional love, and where all of life emanates and flows from, you know. And the only thing that is real is love. Love is all that there is, ever was, as simple as can be, you know. And what kind of unconditional God would condemn its creation, but also, you know, someone who's clearly, you know, in those situations in an immense amount of pain? That's the last thing that you would want. So if that is God, you know, I think you may have to self-reflect on a limited versus unlimited conditional God.
I love that you say that, because I'm an ordained Unity minister. And the reason I chose that path was I grew up Catholic and studied theosophy and Native American spirituality, Buddhism, I was deeply immersed in Hinduism in an ashram. And I love so many pieces of all of those traditions. Their meditation is incredible, in my opinion, their chanting. But I kept pressing to understand God through all of those different eyes and all of those different paths. And when I heard the principle that is the core of unity is that there is one force that runs this universe, and it is the all good, all God, loving consciousness that runs through the universe, creates everything, and runs through all of us, a loving consciousness, and that is God, and we are part of it. I suddenly knew in every cell in my body that that was right, or at least for me, that was exactly true, and that I wanted to align with that awareness now, especially in today's world when we're going through so much struggle. And as you talk about that understanding of God, I think I remember reading in your book that you really had a hard time when you then, after your NDE, you would be in school or in synagogue and you'd be being taught about this very different God from the God consciousness that you'd experienced. How did you make peace with that?
It took a while, and I still, to some degree, struggle with it. But I think it's, you know, it's kind of like grade school, you know, with understanding God. You have, you know, people who, on a soul level, you know, tend to buy into more the organizational religious level. And I think, you know, younger spirits tend to need that degree of structure. But I find older spirits, you know, they don't need the outer God. They're connected, you know, and I think everyone can to a degree. But it's just, it's a younger soul thing. I can't describe it any way else, you know, and there's a lot of amnesia, sadly. But, you know, it's not to condemn that. I think to a degree it's helpful, but it's also could be very limiting and contribute to a great deal of neurosis, OCD, anxiety. It's things that I still have today, because everything is just had to, you know, in my tradition, you know, everything had to be separate. There's a million different rules. You know, the Sabbath ended 7:03, not 7:04. You know, and it's like, I was following this. I'm like, I'm going to be stricken by lightning if I'm 30 seconds late to this stuff. So
it
never made sense, the neuroticism to it.
Yeah.
And I just saw how it was affecting myself psychologically. And it was just like, this is not working. This method is just causing an undue deal of distress. And it's not something that is reflective in my heart. And I bless people if they want to go that path. I think great, there's great mysticism within every religion. I think that's the goal. But the issue is the hijacking of just dogmatic principles, you know, in politics and government that get in the way of, you know, the true mysticism and essence of, you know, a lot of the faiths and paths up to the mountain.
That's so beautifully said. And I'm wondering how you then chose, as you got older and, you know, you had these two worlds you were very aware of as you were growing up, one being the ordinary world with family and school, and the other being the mystical world. And how did you decide, or when in the journey did you say, I need to be a healer? I need to take what I know in my heart and turn around and offer that and make that how I make my living?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the one piece was, I think pain is a great opener of purpose. And certainly having an NDE, I had the most pain, you know, in that, but that was an opener to purpose. It's not the only way, you know, but one day I was kicked out of my home for, you know, I guess having like a bad mouth, and I went into a bad dispute that I had. And I, looking back on it, you know, I was no angel, certainly, but I was kicked out of my home for a couple of days. And when I found out that I was kicked out of my house, I subconsciously wasn't even thinking about it. I just walked around the corner of my home, and I was back into a school. And I looked around me, I'm like, oh my God, here I am in a playground. And it just kind of dawned on me the parallels of the playground that I was in when I had my NDE, and now I was back in it. And I think to me, home was just being a child in God's playground, the allegory of that. And I had my NDE. And then a day or two later, I attended a yoga seminar, and I was still, you know, feeling low. And this woman, just with kind of like spiky short hair, just kind of like, I don't know, that kind of biker kind of look, just came up to me. And I'm just like, who is this person? And she's just started talking to me. I'm like, I was just there for my yoga seminar. I don't want to really be bothered. Normally, I put my walls up. And I'm like a pretty big introvert. And she just says, you know, I see you speaking in front of a crowd one day. You're going to be a very well-known healer. I see you speaking in front of an auditorium, and I see rows of people. You'll see, it's going to happen. And that was validation to me that I, from the pieces of my premonition of my NDE, that others saw it. So, you know, that put me on the path to a degree. But there's many things. It's hard to put to one point, but I have to credit that woman for being a real earth angel, reminding me of who I am and why I'm here.
Yeah. Well, I also want to throw in some interesting stuff I discovered, because I do numerology, as you know, and so I looked at your path, and you are the Taurus 111 master soul, and many of my followers who are into my way of doing numerology know that I always teach there's three different ways to add the birth date. And you have to add it all three ways to see if the master soul number shows up once or twice or three times. If it shows up three times, as it did for you, it means the soul said, Jacob, no way out of this life. You are going to wake up in this life and be an angel and a healer and really make a difference. There's no way out, so to speak. But then you grounded it in Taurus, which is almost the opposite energy. And that's what I love about listening to you talk, because here you are, this brilliant, mystical philosopher and healer and brilliant writer, and you've had out-of-body experiences more than once, and we'll talk about that later. And yet, as you talk about it, it's so practical and down-to-earth and manageable and not scary or anything, or not even emotional, just very everyday logic. And that's the Taurus in you that needs to make it be that way. And then the 111 is hypersensitive, hyper intuitive. You say you're an introvert. I know that you're just a very sensitive, intuitive, angelic being.
Yeah, well, selective, but you know, it's funny that Taurus gets a bad rap many times because, you know, I think like in pop psychology, it's like you're just supposed to sit in your behind and eat all day and not have a personality and be very flat and just kind of like explode, you know, here and there. But I look at, you know, some of the greatest spiritual teachers of our time, you know, from Wayne Dyer, my birthday twin, Shirley MacLaine, you know, so we've seen a lot in Sigmund Freud for psychology was a Taurus, and, you know, Billy Joel, the great singer, was a Taurus, you know, is a Taurus too. So
well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, what I'm saying is a lot, it's an honor to be a part of that club, but a lot of the great spiritual teachers, you know, are born under the Taurian sign. And I think that's for a reason, because we're very grounded. We bring it down to earth. We're relatable. We could be in two worlds very easily.
That's it.
But we're, you know, I think Taurus is the most grounded of the earth signs to me.
And that's why it's so perfect what you set up, because I believe our soul picks the path and chooses the moment of entry and exit of the lifetime. Right. So your soul said, all right, Jacob, you're going to go in there and that really have this angelic, mystical awakening and great healing work to do in the world. So let's make sure that you're very strong and grounded and able to bring it down to the world in a very understandable, user-friendly, practical way. Yeah. So we're going to give you these two opposite energies to balance in this lifetime. And look at you, you're doing amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think the greatest trait of a Taurus is normally I find is loyalty as well as authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what sticks, because two people could be saying the same exact words. But if there's incongruence with those words, they're not going to really listen. So I think the significant piece is integrity and authenticity and just being relatable and real. That's significant. Because a lot of these spiritual teachings, they're just kind of like cooking spinach. It's just so much. But when you reduce it, it's like what could I practically get from this? It sounds really good. But when you leave those seminars, you're like, all right, so how does that translate? How could you have spirituality with practicality?
Well, you know, now you're talking my Virgo talk, because I'm a Virgo. And
I understand.
And I've asked of every path and every teacher I've studied, how does this apply to everyday life for everyday people? Because if we're here on earth, that's what we have to figure out. That's what we've got to master while we're here. And us good earth signs, Virgo and Taurus, we're all about that. We're all about getting it out of the esoteric and bringing it to the everyday.
Yeah.
So do you help your clients? You have a practice as a psychotherapist. Tell me about your work with clients and even how you help them be grounded here in this physical world.
Well, I must have had a past life as a monk, because a part of me would rather almost live in a monastery. And I wanted to do that for a bit of time. My mother would go crazy because I wanted to live in India for, you know, early of my kind of college years. And you know, that wasn't allowed. But to me, being a therapist is the closest thing to being a monk. By that, I mean, you know, you are practicing mindfulness, you're connecting to empathy, you're present with the patients. You know, you learn patience, you know, and you just kind of learn to stay connected to the moment, you know, to wherever the client's at and meeting them where they're at, not necessarily where you're at. So to me, I view my work as just living in an ashram, just in a different way, but in a way where it's not just kind of like about ascending and self-servicing, it's about the service of others, which to me is the closest thing to God. I think a lot of people try to find God, but to me, it's about embodiment of God, which is of service. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. God, I love that. I love every word you're saying here. You're definitely my long lost brother, I think.
New York brother. Yeah.
Yes, New York.
East Coast, West Coast. Yeah.
But you know, what you're saying is so right about being a monk. And it's even making me think about my work and why I love it, because I get to focus on another person's pain and journey of awakening all day long. And it is sacred, holy work for me as well. So I totally understand what you're saying, how blessed we are to get to live these I consider myself a nun. I grew up Catholic. I was sure I was going to become a nun.
That's funny. Yeah. And, you know, and it's like you could take some of that into this. It doesn't have to be full blown, but you could use it, like, again, for practical use. That's a Virgo and the Taurus in us. Like, how could I take that, what I want, and just maybe change it like a different degree? And
that's exactly right.
It's profound. But to me, all of this life, in a way, is a training to be a guide on the other side, too, for many souls who are more advanced. And I think part of that is really being able to understand others, to accept others unconditionally, which, you know, is a crux of our work. But, you know, really, it's just about being that angel, that guide to people here, you know, in this life. And then we go there, we'll be in uniform with who we were here. I think a lot of people think when you cross over, you just turn into an angel. I think you see angels, but you evolve, not evolve, but you come back into your own being and have a fuller expression of that divine spark within, with hopefully each lifetime.
You wrote the most beautiful stuff. And I read both of your books, and I'm trying to remember. I think this is from The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder,
right,
where you wrote, hell is a separation and difficulty in accepting one's actions, and a state of limbo and dance between living in darkness instead of letting it go and entering the light. Do you want to talk more about the idea and the concept of hell as a separation and a difficulty in accepting one's actions? I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give a reference to my NDE. Like, you know, I was holding on to suffering, you know, and I wasn't letting it go. And sometimes, you know, as you say, the devil that we know is what we kind of go to. But it's about reframing some of our cultural myth. Our cultural myth is the more that we hold on to, the more that we have. And really, to me, heaven is about letting go. The more that we let go, the more our energy will grow. So spirituality and the other side is maybe a different dichotomy than what we're used to, where we just hold on and we have possessive and attachment. And you could call that the ego. And to me, when you're very much in the ego, that's a state of separation, which, you know, you could call it hell. I think that's a word. But, you know, that's that, to me, it's just separate from the essence and deprivation of our, you know, connection to our eternity.
I think the word separation is so important, and I would even extend that hell is a separation of feeling that we are separate from other people as well. You know,
right.
as we look around the world right now and see what the problems are, so much of it is about people thinking they're separate from each other. And so they have to behave in a certain kind of way to get ahead of the other person, or to keep the other person in their place, or take more than their share of whatever because they're separate. When you crossed over in your NDE and later in other out-of-body experiences you've had, would you say that you understood the collective that humanity is in a profound way when those things happen? Or would you talk about that more?
Yeah, I mean, direct experiences could transform intellectual awareness to a clear experiential reality. And I mean, for myself, you know, briefly, I had an OBE, you know, my first year of college, community college that I attended. And for several weeks, I just woke up and I was out of my body. I think looking back in it, I would attribute many things. I was doing yoga practice, stuff like that, but plenty of people do yoga practice and don't have OBEs for several weeks. I just think it was, to me, looking back in it, I think the divine wanted me to really believe all this stuff, because I'm my own biggest skeptic and I just push things away, and this kind of gave me full-blown belief system that, whoa, this NDE wasn't something farce, it was real. And this gave me even more confidence that all this stuff, you know, is real. But it, to me, I think it was started because I just started laughing hysterically for an extended period of time. And this wasn't a manic phase. I know what that is. This was laughing where every part of my body was just being squeezed out, and every bit of tension or sadness or anxiety that I had was just kind of like a wet towel of all of the stuff that I accumulated in this life. And I looked at a lot of things that I just bought into, what we call cultural myths. And I looked at it and I just laughed hysterically. Of all these things that we take so seriously are absolutely nothing at the end of the day. And, you know, I just kind of like let go of all those attachments to those concepts and those things that I was taught. And I looked at it straight in the eye and I just laughed hysterically. And my energy just exploded for several weeks, you know, which led to myself being able to really see the one strand of energy that we are all connected to, not just humans, but this earth, this planet, the animals, you know, it's all just one strand. And I was able to see that through my own third eye, which was exploding during this time. You know, for several weeks during this OB, I had a third eye and I felt it here and there, but this was an actual massive eyeball that was slowly blinking on and off. And it was just kind of like annoying sometimes because I would take like a tissue and I just wipe up my forehead thinking that it was sweating, but it was this wet eyeball literally blinking on and off of my forehead. It wasn't like a small little, it was an actual eyeball that I felt just blinking on and off. And I had a lot of premonitions during this time. Everything was just fully activated. And it was, I would say, one of the greatest couple weeks of my life, but also to my human side, a little bit confusing too. It was a roller coaster, you know.
Well, you were in college, which means you had to get your homework done too.
You know what? I finished with all A's and I had an OBE, you know, for several weeks. But I started my college career at the lowest possible level of reading and writing. Mm-hmm. And I had a Virgo aunt during my first or second semester who was one of my spirit guides. She was a late August Virgo. And she actually was a teacher for the blind for Jose Feliciano. So she taught the blind, but that was an allegory for her life because she taught people who couldn't see things, or she taught people to really see the unseen forces. And she was into all this stuff, you know, the metaphysical stuff. And she was like my first big teacher to get me back on this path. But she looked at my writing. She says, "You're an incredible writer." I'm like, "You know, pass over that joint. I want it because I don't see that." But she, again, she was able to see the unseen. And that's the work that she did as a teacher for the blind, the visually impaired rather. So I think, yeah, it's so significant that people understand that there could possibly be angels, not just over there, but earth angels here, you know, who remind us of who we are and the infinite power within ourselves. And she was someone who totally did that for me.
Do you believe that we have people that are in our life that are going to step forward right at the moment that we need them to, and that it's a prearranged soul agreement of some kind, like your aunt?
Without question. I mean, when people have significant roles, it's all, you know, predetermined, I think. You know, significant moments, significant roles are all within the playing, you know. So, yes, that was certainly orchestrated. And, you know, it's, you couldn't ask for a better teacher in many ways. How could you script that? It's like someone who worked with the blind and then just lived that in the metaphysical sense, mm-hmm. you know. So, absolutely. And actually, I'm looking at her picture right now as I speak. So, you know, she's certainly an angel. But I mean, she left me with her last message about soul families, which I always kind of studied. She would give me books to read, you know, Sylvia Brown books and all that kind of stuff. And I'd have to report to her every week because she saw something in me. She didn't do this with anyone else but me. She was, you know, and we come from the religious background. So it was kind of like an underground hangout that we had to kind of get away from it all. It's just kind of underground secret conversations. Now it's more embraced, but she was about to go. She had was, you know, what's called lucid visions and stuff like that, deathbed visions. And she kept on saying, you know, if you look at a picture of a family, you know, they may have, you know, different characteristics, but if you look at the eyes, which are the windows to who we are, there's something similar uniting everyone. And I thought, it's a nice message, nothing of it. But then, you know, a year or two later, I was being read by an evidential medium, and she brought forward my aunt with evidence after evidence. And then she said, "Why is she talking about pictures? What's the message?" And I knew it was validation of the soul family and the interconnectedness that goes far beyond this lifetime.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. You know, tomorrow is the 43rd anniversary of my great soul awakening when my beautiful husband, Paul Frederick, died in my arms when I was 29. And it's just amazing how time and space are not linear, because I do know that Paul is probably my greatest teacher, and he comes back again and again to make sure I'm getting things right and understanding them. And this weekend, I was having a weekend of feeling very sensitive and kind of emotional for no reason that I could understand, and also feeling like, you know, gee, my work, I haven't done enough good work in the world. I was just in this kind of spiral that can happen sometimes. And Paul and I had a sign that was the first gift he ever gave me of a crescent moon with a star in the middle. And he gave it to me as a necklace. And he said, I'm the moon and you're the star. And then when he died, we were having an outdoor celebration of life. And a friend nudged me to look at the sky, and it was that symbol, the crescent moon with the planet Jupiter in the middle. So this weekend, I'm out shopping with my husband, and I'm talking about, I don't know why I'm so emotionally oversensitive. We walk into a store, and there's the sign from Paul. It's huge. It's metallic sculpture of this crescent moon, golden crescent moon with this huge star in the middle. And it knocked me over. It was so powerful. Wow. And I got the message so quickly. I was like, it just brought tears to my eyes. And I could feel Paul saying, come on, you're doing fine. Just, you know, get over all those emotions. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. And just reminding me that he's still with me and everything is well. And I keep talking to parents who have lost children, and their children go out of their way to bring those parents incredible signs like that just when they need them most. And I'm just wondering, in your experience, who do you feel connects with you that way most from the other side? Is it your aunt, or are there other people there too?
Yeah, no, I connect with a lot. You know, I've had one of my best friends a year or two ago completed suicide. And, you know, that was one of the most difficult moments of my life, but also a big impetus to finish my book, you know. So he comes through a lot. My grandfather is around, my aunt is around, but that's a beautiful story and just speaks to the evidence of eternity that, you know, I read a lot of Dr. Gary Schwartz. It seems like every single one of my colleague and friend is in the Arizona area. You know, he's in Tucson.
Yeah.
But he writes a lot about the probability of these super synchronicities, and it's like 0.000, you know, so for this to happen at this place, this time, there's no, like, it's impossible.
Yes.
Statistically, for these things to happen. And I mean, the biggest sign that I ever got was my grandmother passed away Memorial Day last year. And I found out we were having a Shabbat meal at my parents' house. And, you know, I go there Friday nights here and there. And then I go into the car, I turn on, you know, I found out for fortunate passing, I turn on my car, open Spotify. And then Spotify says, Grandma's home. It's never happened to me ever before. You know, so it just like floored me, and I was just like, okay, I hear you.
Loud and clear. My God, that's so great.
That Spotify, it's just, I had the picture of it. It's at Grandma's home. You can't beat that. Never happened to me. never happened to me once, never happened to me since. You know, so stuff like these kind of things, I think what's important is to just be aware of it and ask for it.
Yes,
you know, and know that like they are reading our thoughts. They know exactly what's going on. They're tuned in. And, you know, this work is rewarding, but I think there's a double-edged sword phenomenon with, you know, the social media component and the YouTube component, where it's almost kind of like, you know, who's got more followers, who does this, who does that. And it's just almost kind of like capitalism of spirituality. It's like for the very like 1% who dominate this stuff, and then the average person is just trying to get their message across. And but, you know, it's just really, I've found it's really about the work. It's not about the results, it's not about the numbers, it's about the process and just being about the work and in integrity. Yeah. And, you know, it's, if you can help one person, you help to change, you know, the lives. But I think a lot of people get deflated because of comparisons with, you know, these kind of influential, you know, big, you know, big, and they do great work too, but it's just, you know, everyone has a different role in it. No one's bigger or better. It's all significant.
You're exactly right about that. And, you know, this was my 11th book that just came out through a divine lens.
11 book, 11th number book. 11. Yeah.
And I had gotten attached to the idea that this would be the book that was, you know, the big bestseller. And what I've come to learn, just like you're saying, is there has to be a constant focus just on the doing the good work in
That's
the world.
It.
And let
that's
the universe it. Take it where it's going to take it and where it's meant to be. And that's what Paul was really telling me this weekend. I knew that's what he was saying. He was like, quit beating yourself up. Everything is fine. You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And it really just shifted me back into my right perspective, you know. Right. And that book will find the people who it can help. And there's no question in my mind about that, because to me, it's the most helpful book I've ever written. So I know that the angels and the guides will get it into the hands of whoever needs it. So what is your next book, Jacob?
I don't know. You know, that's the hard part is I'm 33 years old and I've written two books, which, you know, is
pretty amazing.
Is a lot. But now I'm like, oh God, I have the rest of my life and I can't just finish at two books. Like, that puts pressure on me. You know, and you inspire me with 11 books. And I really do want to write another one. It just hasn't come to me yet. But I think it's, you know, kind of like a little bit of a book about how to live in a mindful way, in a way, you know, how to be present in the present, how to maximize this reality, you know, so kind of like a Zen mindfulness book, I think is on my radar, but I really do want to serve, and however the universe wants me to, that's what they will. If they want me to stay quiet for a little bit, but I find, you know, these books just kind of come through me.
Yes,
I don't.
They do.
I surrender it, and I just kind of ask universe, like, how could I be of service? You know, do I have the finances to afford, you know, all the fancy schmancy? This, no, I just do the best I can with what I have, and, you know, that's all we can do. And I've gotten great feedback. So that's, you know, good. You know?
Jacob, you're doing so great at 33. Yeah. This is amazing what you've accomplished and what you're already teaching. In the next few decades, you are going to be out in the world in a bigger and bigger way because you're so needed and your message is so needed here.
All right. Well,
The next book will bubble up inside of you when the time is right.
It will come. Now is just kind of resting. You know, it's the interesting part about life is, you know, we know the ending, that there is no ending. We're just uncertain about what's around the corner, and that's okay. We cannot fail. As long as we're being true to ourselves, how could we fail? And so I think it's about being authentic, trusting that no matter what, there is no ending, and it's neither good nor bad. These are just experiences of the soul. And, you know, just maximize our time here because our afterlife is very much reflective of this life. And what we do here in this life is reflect. And I say this in every single segment, but it's so true. Like, I was watching Dr. Wayne Dyer, and, you know, the Taurus that I mentioned, and someone asked him, like, what's spiritually about? What's God it's about? And he, in the Shift documentary, he said, you know, God is really about enthusiasm. And they asked him, like, what does that mean? And he says, you know, enthusiasm comes from the Greek word entheos, which means the inner God within. And so when you find the things that you love and are passionate about, you know, that's the connectivity to divinity. That is the divine. That's where divine dwells. So I think for each person to find their path, it's not 1,000 miles away. It's, you know, following your heart's desires and what, you know, keeps you going here. You know, that's divine.
And doing our good work day by day and just keeping our focus on that. And that's what you're doing. And it's just so beautiful to see. Is there anything else you want to say to the listeners before we wrap up?
No, I just hope that this was a gentle reminder, you know, of the expansiveness and the eternity of the soul. And, you know, to embrace the good and the bad. I think in our society, we're very trendy. When we see something challenging, we tend to move away from it or just, you know, kind of avoid it or bypass it. And I think pain for myself and many of my clients has been a great opener of purpose and transformation. But it's about surrendering to that eye of the hurricane and finding that piece of clarity within the storm, you know.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jacob. It has been an absolute blessing.
Likewise.
And Jacob Cooper, the author of, Jacob, what is your website? Tell the listeners.
So people could find me through, you know, groups or individual services through jacoblcooper.com. I'll be in Lilydale August 8th if anyone is interested in the world's largest spiritualism center, at least in the United States, definitely. And I also have a YouTube platform, which I know you'll be on, and it's also on Spotify, iTunes, called The Wisdom Jacob's Ladder. We bring on a lot of influential thought, you know, leaders, artists, you know, creative minds, and people with passions on as guests, you know, to our channel. So no, we're excited to have you on to think closest to your desire too. So this is going to be fun to have your viewers, you know, see you, you know, also in another, yeah, you know, on the other side is getting interviewed. So yeah.
That's so cool. And remember, listeners, his books are Life After Breath and The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder. And he's a phenomenal writer. You'll just love reading his work. So on that note, thank you so much, Jacob. It's been such a pleasure. You're definitely my brother here. And I'm so grateful to connect with you again in this lifetime. So many, many blessings to you. And until we meet again, thank you so much.
An honor, Sue. Thank you.
Thank you.